Welcome to this special edition of the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your co-host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this afternoon is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Stone, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but it's a little unusual for us to do a Wednesday afternoon edition of High Velocity Radio. Is it throwing off your biorhythms?
It must be important.
This is going to be fun stuff. It even screwed up our lunch plans. Are we going to go to the varsity after this, or what's going
to
happen?
You know we are. If we're going to come up here to Alpharetta, we have to go to the varsity.
No, this is going to be a great segment because we have two gentlemen in the studio that have been on the show before, and they are in the wealth management arena. In fact, I need to read a disclosure statement before we get started, so you hang in there with me for a minute, Lee. The opinions voiced in this show, the High Velocity Radio Show, are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities at Sullivan & Schliemann Wealth Management, LLC, are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. How did I do, man?
That was awesome.
Excellent.
We ought to carve that out, and we'll just start using that on all of our... Anytime
exactly.
We have a wealth management person...
Well, it doesn't matter.
We hit the button. So with all that fancy legal stuff out of the way, welcome back to the show, Mr. Andrew Sullivan and Josh. Am I remembering this right, Schliemann?
You got it.
I'm batting
awesome.
1,000.
Very good.
And that's a hard name.
So what have you guys been up to since we saw you last?
Just making the markets go up and growing our business.
I like that.
I mean, we had such a great time on your show last time, and we got so inspired. Like I say, we put in an order to make the market go up 6%.
Very nicely done.
Well, I can't wait till 3 months from now.
Yeah,
huh?
We just got to have them like every 6 weeks, right? So tell us a little bit about what you're enjoying the most about this market and what you're finding a little bit frustrating, if anything, as you're working under these current conditions.
What's great about the market is to have finally some statements in the last 6 or 9 months that show a positive return for the clients.
Is it fun to like make the follow-up call and so you know what their statement looks like and you call and say, how about it, Joe? How are things looking, man?
Absolutely. Let's not focus on December. Let's focus on January.
Exactly.
It makes the meetings a little more enjoyable, that's for sure.
It does.
I'll bet it does. So what is the biggest challenge in your business? Is it the day-to-day, or is it getting that first piece of business, getting someone to trust you and at least start to do a little bit of work with you? What do you think?
Well, I think a couple things. One is that first leap of faith for a client is certainly a big hurdle to cross. So developing the trust is something that takes time. But I think the biggest challenge in our practice is just managing an animal which is difficult to predict sometimes, which is the market. You know, some of these outside influences, the world issues, situations, politics, things like that, that can come into play and impact our clients and their assets are sometimes very unpredictable, and so it's tough to manage through that. That's probably the biggest challenge that we face, at least right now.
Now, you said that the market's been up lately, so that makes the calls easier. When the market goes down, don't your clients call you?
Typically not. You might be surprised to hear that, but at least our client base is pretty comfortable with the plan we put in place and what's going on in their portfolios to limit downside risk and protect them in tough times, but also achieve some good returns in positive markets, that they understand it's a process and there'll be some good days and some bad days.
Right.
But overall, we're moving in the right direction.
But when it's going up, are they calling you to say, hey, great job? Or you have to call them to say, hey, look at it.
I've been in this business 25 years. I'm waiting on that first one of those calls.
You haven't got that great job call yet?
No.
I was going to say rare occasion, but maybe never is a better description for that.
But it's also the level of communication.
Right.
I mean, we have probably on average 100-plus touch points with each client every year.
Wow. So you're talking to them twice a week.
Man.
Well, it's weekly emails about the markets and economic conditions. It's regular, consistent meetings with clients.
Right.
It is phone calls. We send out a number of things just to tell them about events that we're producing or hosting.
Right.
So we stay in touch with our clients a good bit. So they don't need to call us.
Right, because you just have the natural flow of conversation that you're having regularly.
Correct.
So there's no urgency to call you because they know they're going to stay in touch with you on a regular basis.
Correct.
Now, I guess that would be a good tip for somebody looking for somebody in wealth management if there isn't that kind of level of connection, there's probably a problem then.
So I think it's a big, big problem. As a prime example, when the market took its big downturn in starting in August of 08 and through March of 09, Josh and I personally face-to-face sat with each of our clients three times minimum. And that doesn't include the countless times that we actually had phone conversations with them.
Right.
So it's very, very important to stay in touch with your clients when things get rough.
And did any of those conversations happen on a ledge?
Oh,
we call it talking to the client off the ledge and back in the boat.
Right.
Yes.
So how do you know when you really need a wealth manager? Do you have to have Lee Cantor-sized pockets? What are the criteria that I'm looking to say, you know, it's about time, honey, we talk to a wealth manager?
Well, I think at all levels of your financial life, you need some guidance. If you're not an expert in the area of determining how best to manage assets and liabilities and insurance programs and estate planning, taxes, those kind of topics that we cover for clients, then you probably need some guidance. Now, you know, if you're 18 years old in college with $2 in your checking account, maybe you're not quite there yet, but once you get in the career and start building retirement assets and have need for these other items, then I think it's time you contact somebody about that service.
So if I'm leading the Occupy movement, maybe I'm not an ideal client at the moment?
Maybe not. You might need somebody, but I don't know that you need Sullivan & Schliemann Wealth Management.
Well, it depends. If you're selling those shirts, you're probably making a nice bit of money.
You got to tell your story. He was at the Occupy. Lee goes to all these things.
Yes. I happened to be in New York when that was going on. And I have a 14-year-old son, and he pays attention to this kind of stuff. So he's like, we're here. Let's go down and check it out. And I'm like, you know, we've been to all the touristy stuff, so you're like, okay, why not? We'll go down there. So we go down there, and the park is not very big. I mean, that's in the news. They make it look like it's Central Park, but it's really the size of the studio, really. You know, it takes like 30 seconds to walk from one end to the other. It's not this huge park. And if you've spent any time in New York, you know they have parks in any little sliver of grass is a park there. And it's one of those. And so my favorite part of being down there was within the park, there was this guy that looked kind of homeless, and he was selling pins that said Occupy Wall Street. So, which I thought was kind of ironic in that they're protesting, you know, kind of against capitalism.
Capitalism, yeah.
Right. But this guy's like, you see, and I was taking pictures of him handing a pin to somebody and taking like $10, you know, that was okay.
And I'm sure he was checking his email on his iPhone.
Exactly.
And his Apple
I'm sure
computer.
He was paying taxes on that. You know, I'm sure
absolutely,
all that was happening.
Sure.
So it was. So I got to go down there. It was kind of a neat experience. Hmm.
So do you have people in your office that decide if something is a good investment or a bad investment? How do you make that call? And is that part of
they just call me and do whatever the opposite. They do the opposite.
Lee, what
I
did you buy yesterday?
Right. And then they sell.
That's a good start, right?
Right.
We actually... Josh and I are very in tune with all the investments that are in the office and what our clients own. But we also have a specialist in our office, Kelly Pickett, that is her job as portfolio specialist and our financial planner. So we rely, the three of us are the final decision makers on investments that go into clients' accounts. We also heavily rely on numbers of different resources for economic data and portfolio selections, including LPL, our clearing firm.
And so if things tank, the calls go to Kelly. If things are going well, route all calls to you. Is that?
That sounds about right.
That's how the email reads. Yeah.
That's
and
nice.
I'm sure Kelly's listening right now. So,
so you brought somebody with you here today. You want to introduce him?
Sure. I'd like to introduce Mike Smith in Lawrenceville of Andrew Merritt Riley and Smith. Mike's specialties are probate and estate work as well as conservatorship, guardianship, and trustee fiduciary work.
Glad to be with you guys.
Well, welcome to the show, man. So, as I understand it, wealth managers, attorneys, you guys, you're always trying to help each other out and look out for the best interest of your clients. You guys try to work together in the interest of the client, don't you?
Correct. When we are, we value relationships with other centers of influence and other service providers. And so when we find a great service provider that we can trust and we value greatly, we refer as much business as we possibly can. When I get up in the morning, my first thought is, how do I grow Sullivan & Schliemann? My second thought is how do I grow Andrew Merritt Riley and Smith?
And that, but you have several referral sources, right? You have across, because you have to serve your client whatever needs they have, right?
Correct.
So I'm sure you have kind of a portfolio.
If a client, no, we only have one estate attorney, that's Mike Smith. But we have numbers of if you needed a CPA,
right?
If you needed a property and casualty insurer,
like a house painter.
We don't quite go that far. Yeah. But if you needed somebody to quote commercial insurance, if you needed someone to,
banking service.
We have a long list of preferred vendors that we refer business to, and we try to make that a reciprocal relationship.
Right.
Now, Mike, your focus area is estate law.
That's right.
Is that right? So what are some of the common mistakes that those of us who do not have an estate lawyer on attorney might on retainer might make?
Well, now that could last all day if
that's
you've
a full
time.
Show, huh?
Yeah, every lawyer has lots of war stories that they like to tell, and certainly in the probate world, there's lots of them. Whether it's not having proper estate planning documents prepared or ready, or whether it is having an incapacity or a death occur in a family that is unexpected or that has not been planned for, all of those things ultimately lead to some probate lawyer's office most of the time, and that we just happen to do that full time.
Now, I think that's I don't know if the average person understands, like if you're young and then somebody dies and you have a kid, that the state gets involved, right? It's not automatically go to a family member. Like if the two parents die and there's a kid and there was no will or anything, isn't that now a big mess?
Well, it's actually a common misconception that the state of Georgia gets involved in your personal estate affairs. Now, it does happen. That's for sure. There are instances where the court has to appoint people to come in for protection of assets or for protection of minor children who might be heirs who don't otherwise have protection available. And so there are situations where the court gets involved in that sort of thing. But for the most part, you need to think of the probate process or the estate process, as we like to call it. Those words really simply mean creating a process for the orderly transference of assets.
Right.
It might be the home, or it might be some other real estate, or it might be bank accounts or investments.
So a kid isn't necessarily an asset. They could be a liability. Right?
Uh-huh. Huge liability, as we discussed last time.
Right, right.
Depends on who you ask.
It's time for the free consulting segment of our show. So I married up. My wife has a real job. I've got a kid at University of Georgia. I've got a kid in high school. My parents are retired, and they're not wealthy by most people's standards, but they have plenty. They're not hurting. Is it time for me to talk to an estate planner type person, or do I wait till things get moving a little further along? Or is it a good idea just to go ahead and get at least some documents and stuff in order?
Well, that's right. The latter is probably most important. Take that preemptive step of going ahead and planning for the future. That means getting appropriate will and estate documents done, which include things like health care powers of attorney and financial powers of attorney, last will and testaments, trusts, those kinds of things. Because when the time comes that one or both of your parents pass, then it makes it so much easier, whether it's in my office or in Andrew or Josh's office or whatever the next step may be, makes it so much easier to get the task completed quickly and efficiently.
Now, you mentioned like health-related documents. I had a situation where my mother died, but when she was dying, there was a debate within the family of like what exactly is like kind of, what is it, like life-saving, heroic measures?
When are we going to pull the plug is what he's trying to say.
Right.
So it's not a black and white issue. Like,
right.
It sounds it when you're filling out the documents, but when it's actually happening, there's like a margin of error, room for debate in that. Do you find that?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that the notion of a health care power of attorney, for instance, is something that most folks don't really appreciate or think about when they talk about doing their estate planning. When I use the word probate, that's sort of a global term that means that deals with folks' assets after they've passed, but it also deals with the pre-planning, the preemptive things like the last will and testament and trust, and then the healthcare power of attorney. And
right.
And the reason those things are important is because on the healthcare side, as your question asks, is that if you don't take appropriate action to grant the proper legal authority to someone to make healthcare decisions for you, then the state is going to make those decisions for you. Now, I said earlier that the state of Georgia doesn't get involved, but there are some default provisions that if you don't do anything with regard to your health care, they're going to keep those machines plugged in. They're going to keep that.
That's the default position?
That's the default position. Mm-hmm. That's right. And there are some mechanisms that would allow a family to authorize the removal of life support or which sometimes, remember, the life support, when we talk about it in general, we think of the term as pulling the plug. And
right.
Sometimes it's a respirator,
sure.
To be sure, but oftentimes it's just a feeding tube,
right.
or a hydration means. So so by taking the step of doing those things, you take the decisions away from the state, you take the burden off of your family from trying to figure out what to do, and if the documents are properly drafted, the doctors are going to honor those,
right.
those wishes, and you won't have that clutter. At the end of the
sure.
At the end of the story.
Now, so then it puts the family back in control of the situation.
It puts the person who signed the document in control.
Right.
Right. Lawyers always answer the question differently. I love that. So I want to hear more about how you guys work together. I'm trying to envision sitting at the kitchen table with you, Mike, and you teeing up. You see something. And you're thinking to yourself, that's Sullivan and Schliemann. That's Sullivan. And so you've written that down 3 or 4 times during our conversation. How do you tee that up and set it up so that now I'm introduced to these guys and I have at least some initial degree of trust and I'm ready to have the same kind of substantive conversation with them that I've had with you?
Well, I think the term that was used earlier was service provider, and whether it's Sullivan Schliemann or whether it's our firm, anybody in this market is exactly that. It's a service. Our job is to manage whatever that person who's sitting in front of us. It's our job to manage their business affairs that they have presented to us, and I know with me over the years. You know, a financial planner is no different than your family doctor, as we used to know it before right. some of the more recent health care.
So you only see him for 6 minutes?
Right, right. back in the day when we had family doctors.
Right.
Yeah. Your doctor, your accountant, your lawyer, all of those people are really key folks in your life, and you don't shop around for those folks like you would the Best Buy on a TV. Somewhere. So when you find one of those service providers that you respect and that takes care of your client, it's very easy to send that client and the next client to those people because you don't have to look over their shoulders or wonder if they're going to do the right thing. You know your client's going to be taken care of. So if you're sitting at my kitchen table, I don't have a problem. I analyze your situation, and if part of what you are telling me is legal and the other part is financial, it's a no-brainer.
The level of trust, Andrew, Josh, Mike, that you guys must have for each other, I mean, that's got to be incredible. Because, I mean, you're putting your clients in front of these people. I can't imagine.
Not only the clients, but your reputation,
right.
too.
Right.
And it's very, very critical. And Mike and I have had our relationship as cross-refer partners for almost 20 years. And as Mike said, it's I can the Ronco commercial, I can set it and forget it. I can send somebody over there to Mike's office, and I have such great level of trust in Mike that I don't have to follow up with it, touch it again. I know he's going to take excellent care of that client, and in turn, it makes us look good.
Now, Josh, you're not quite as long in the tooth as some of the rest of us here in the studio, but you must have your antenna up and your eyes open for the next Mike, right?
Sure. Well, a couple things. That's true. Also, I've been fortunate enough to step into this relationship, as you mentioned, a few years later. I wasn't there at the inception, but I can tell you one of the reasons that it works so well, just from my perspective, coming into it midstream, is that our firms and our goals for clients are very similar. So anytime we look for a relationship, whether it be an estate planner or attorney like Mike or an accountant, any of these other individuals that Andrew mentioned, we're looking for similarities. Putting the client's interest first, high level of service, trying to go out of their way to solve the problem the client has, find a solution to whatever their issue may be, whether it be legal advice, financial advice, or what have you. So the fact that we always put the client first and put a high priority on the way the client is handled and taken care of are a couple big reasons why this referral relationship works so well.
Now, in general, don't you find that when you have relationships with your clients that obviously you're the care and feeding of which is, you know, a daily job for you guys, part of the service you provide is your Rolodex to these kind of trusted advisors for them, because your clients trusting that, you know, that you've kissed a bunch of frogs to find the princes and princesses that's that are right out there, right? That's part of what they're buying when they're correct. they're dealing with this a firm like yours, is that right?
That is correct. Absolutely.
I think, too, along those lines, our clients look to us and we try to portray ourselves to them as a problem solver.
Right.
So whether that problem has to do with estate planning, managing assets in the market,
right,
how to refinance my mortgage, whatever the issue may be.
Except not painting, house painting.
Occasionally painting. We do no painting.
Where exactly do you draw the line?
Well,
we
do a lot of work with Habitat, so that's probably about the extent of the painting service. So
maybe I can get Josh to paint. How about that?
You know, I think from the Sullivan and Schliemann side of things, there's no stone left unturned. I have used the phrase before, Andrew and Josh, they kind of get in their client's business whether their client wants them there or not. And when a client sees that level of concern or involvement, the client automatically feels like, now I've got somebody that really is working for me, that's really paying attention to my needs or to my situation. And so when they make that referral out of their Rolodex, they know that the client knows that they're going to be well taken care of.
Right, that you have somebody that's watching your back. I mean, that's what everybody wants, the peace of mind, knowing that, you know, when I'm working with somebody, that they've got my best interest at heart.
That's right.
So what are some tactical best practices for all of us out there ought to be doing a better job with this referral, care and feeding of our referral sources? It may not be as critical to some of our businesses as it is for you guys, but what are some just good tactical practices that we should engage in? If I'm going to refer a piece of business over to my buddy Joe, who is the painter, I don't know, do I give him a call ahead of time? What are some things you should do to make that smooth and make that all work well?
Well, I think there's a lot of things you can do to make it work well, but first is you've got to work to get the client in front of the individual they need to see. So in other words, take an interest in their situation, understand that they need an estate planner, and put them in front of the right person who you think will fit with their personality and their situation and can solve their problem.
But don't just hand them a business card. Do you actually go the extra mile and get them together, get them on the phone together?
You have lunch together?
Depends on the client and the situation, right. But a lot of times we may refer them to Mike's office with his contact information.
Right.
Sometimes we may speak to Mike first and ask Mike to reach out to the client.
Right.
But when I say get them ready to see Mike, what I mean is kind of what Mike told you about us earlier as to why he's comfortable dealing with our firm.
Right.
We'll lay out those parameters to the client first. Look, these guys are great at what they do. They're going to provide you the same level of service you receive from us. They're going to solve the problem that you've got that we've talked about. So you're making them feel comfortable about the referral you're making so that when Mike calls, they're ready and anticipating, even welcoming that phone call because right. Mike's going to solve a problem.
What do you tell Mike? Look, this Stone guy, he's a whack job. His wife has a real job. He loves bourbon. And just put up with his jokes. I'm telling you, he'll be a decent client. You got to do that kind of advance work, right?
So if we were talking about you, yes, we would definitely lay that up and say.
We do a lot of that prep work, but also we could legitimately sit there and say, Mike's office has done all of our estate and paperwork.
Right.
Powers of attorney, wills, living wills, and things like that.
So you're just not willy-nilly going to your first business card, your Rolodex. You've thought through, look, this is what Stone and his wife need.
Right, because they're trying to find the right fit.
Right.
It's not just like you're just, you know, you go to some of these leads clubs and they're just handing out business cards.
Right.
It's not that at all.
Well,
it's much deeper.
I think it's very important that if you have got to feel comfortable in the work that's being done, that you're willing to do it to yourself or have that work done.
Right.
So I can look the client in the eye and say, look, I've had gone through this same process. I had a great experience. Go talk to Mike.
Now, Mike, I understand that you're in like your 18th year of being a county administrator, county conservator for Gwinnett County.
Well, did you lose
right.
a bet?
That's
what you drew the short straw? What happened?
Yeah, I tell everyone the title is county administrator, which means virtually nothing most days. and it's not the kind of county administrator that manages the government end of the county. Every probate court in the state of Georgia has what's called a county administrator, or they're supposed to. And that's a person who is the court utilizes for the purpose of handling the legal affairs of estates that come through the court where a legal matter is at issue or a tax matter. An example would be there's a will contest or there's a discrepancy between what the decedent was supposed to have owned when he died and what's left of what he owns. That's the county administrator.
That part. Happens a lot on 8 Mile Creek Road, a discrepancy between what we thought the guy had when he was living after Grandpa's gone.
Yeah, it happens a lot. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how many folks die with more than one spouse and not even one will. That happens too. So will challenges, disputes over estate distributions, tax problems, all those things are relevant for the probate court, and that's what the probate courts use the county administrator for.
Man, don't you wish there was a website that had all that stuff in there?
Wouldn't that be great?
Wow. I heard you guys have developed a website to that effect.
Right. We have a website, probategeorgia.com, that is dedicated solely to the probate court issues that you would normally see. It's got a listing of all the things that you might see occur in a probate court, from the wills and estate planning things that we've been talking about to the actual probate administrations of what happens if you do have a will and what happens if you don't and what are the consequences of this and that. It also talks about other things that the probate court deals with that most folks don't really appreciate or know about, and that is that the probate courts are in charge of incapacitated adults, so that when there's a need for a guardianship or a conservatorship, it's the probate court, actually, that you go to, and the probate court has the jurisdiction to form those things. And that's the other half of my job. County administrator deals with the what we call decedent estates after someone has passed, and county conservator deals with the management of monies and assets while the person is alive. And otherwise unable to do that job on their own.
Now, you are a busy man.
Well, I'm not that busy.
Well, no wonder you rely so heavily on referrals. I'm curious, and this question is for all three of you, are you able to, and have you found it effective, to do any of what the rest of us might consider more traditional sales and marketing activities? I mean, do you advertise? Do you pick up the phone and call people? Do you knock on doors? Or is all that stuff just so far removed from what works for you guys? It's got to be tough out there.
It is, but I think we do not knock on doors. We don't do mailers. We've always relied on centers of influence and other clients for our referrals, because inherently your close rate, your success rate is so much greater because I've had a personal introduction from a Mike or a client that says, these guys do exactly what they say and they're great. Go talk to them.
Right. The closing ratio is going to be so much higher.
Significantly higher than the time it would take to do a mailer and get a 2 or 3% success rate.
I did get a nice postcard in the mail, so I know some people do this about going to, they said
steak
they would
dinner.
Feed you a steak. Yeah. Well, they sent it to Holly. I don't
not
really,
to you.
I'd never
well,
make it
you're
on
not
the radar.
On that list.
But Holly got the postcard that she could bring her spouse. So I know some people do that. But know that you're in such a much better position to have a meaningful conversation when you've been referred by a colleague like Mike.
Correct, you? Correct. And this is not like, as Mike said, buying a TV where it's a transaction one and done and you're
right.
out. And if it doesn't work, you can scrap the TV and move on. I mean, we hold, Mike as well, we hold people's lives and futures in our hands.
Sure.
And so I can't imagine somebody that would respond to someone to manage their assets from a postcard.
Or a cold call.
Or a cold call,
sure.
Yes.
It was a really good-looking steak on this card. Now.
It was, okay, all right.
So note to self, it depends on how pretty the picture is.
Yes, that's right.
You just got to know your audience, that's all. So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more about you and your practice, Mike?
Well, we're located in Gwinnett County, but we practice from one end of the state to the other. We have two websites. The main probate site is probategeorgia.com, And then we have a the firm website. The firm does other things besides probate, but the main focus is probate. But that firm website is amrslaw.com, amrslaw.com. And then, of course, our main number, 770-513-1200.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I hope you'll come back sometime. I know there's a ton of other topics that we could dive into, and it's been a lot of fun and very informative. I thoroughly appreciate you coming and visiting with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. And thank you guys for bringing him in. Let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys as well before we go, though.
Absolutely. Phone number, main phone line is 678-867-0500, 678-867-0500. Website is SullivanAndSchliemann.com. I'll spell it. It's SullivanAnd, the and is spelled out, and then Schliemann, SchliemannSchliemann.com.
Terrific. Josh, thanks for coming, man. You kept everybody on track. I think the compliance officers that are listening in, they can breathe a sigh of relief, right?
Thanks a lot. We enjoyed it.
We had a great time. Thank you.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this afternoon, Andrew Sullivan, John Schliemann, and Mike Smith, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.